It's back. Hi again, and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 192. Today is Wednesday, January 20th, 2010. I have had another attack of gout this week. I'll talk about that first, and I have my usual news updates. And then I have a bit of a more controversial topic than I've had recently. But first, the gout. It's just one of those things that just doesn't ever seem to go away precisely. And this time it hit my knee, which is the first time that's happened in about 8 years. And it all started on Saturday. I had a bit of an achy sort of thing, so I took some Nurofen, and that pretty much took care of it. Wednesday morning, it was a little bit worse, and I was a bit concerned, but I still couldn't tell if I just hurt my knee, you know, like banged it on something and just wasn't aware of it, or if it was actual gout. And it, as the day wore on, it became clear it was gout. Monday morning, I woke up, and I was able to move around more or less, but I had a bit of trouble getting started anyway. And Nigel decided that we should get some crutches, you know, the kind that wrap around your forearm and you got the handles you put in your grips. They don't, not the kind that go under your arms. And so we did some checking and found out that we could rent them for $60 for a month, and which is the minimum, or you could buy them for something like $90 or something. And considering that this isn't the first time I've needed something like that, and probably won't be the last, we decided that buying them was a better option. So we did. Meanwhile, we were watching the girls, our young nieces, for the afternoon. So they rode with us when we went over to the other side of the city to pick up the crutches. By the time we got back to our house, I was starting to feel quite a bit of pain and just didn't feel well, because one of the things about a gout attack is there are often flu-like symptoms that accompany it. So I laid down and took some medicine and actually dozed off for a while, and Nigel kind of looked after them. He had taken the afternoon off. And so that was pretty much it. I mean, I was not fun at all on Monday. Tuesday, yesterday, I got up in the morning and felt halfway decent. I still needed the crutches to get around. Then I got a bit better and didn't need them so much. But by around midday, I started feeling really bad again. And so I ended up taking more pills and then laying down and having a bit of a nap. And then Nigel came home early, and I ended up having another nap later on. And I just felt crummy all afternoon. Well, today when I got up, I felt not so bad. Used the crutches to get around at first till I got moving. And since then, I haven't really needed them. I use one on the affected side just in case, because the joint is always a bit weak when there's an attack going on, or the muscles just suddenly will just not be there for support. So I like to use the crutch instead. But I'm on my full medicine regime now, which I found out by going to the site of Britain's National Health Service, the NHS, which says that you can take Nurofen and paracetamol, which Americans usually call acetaminophen, together, but they recommend staggering them so that you don't risk any possibility of overdose. So They recommend an hour offset, but I make it two, so that way I know I'm taking something every 2 hours. And that's worked pretty well. The Nurofen works with the inflammation in the joint, and the paracetamol works with the fevery feeling and a bit of the pain, if there is any. And I actually haven't had any pain today, so I think I might be on the mend. Shh, just quietly. But I mean, this, what kind of sick fate throws a gout attack in on your birthday week? I mean, really. It just isn't rad, I tell you. But that's what I'm dealing with this week. Now, I have a few news updates, a few news stories and updates, starting with the updates. Last time I talked about how U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was coming to New Zealand. Well, that ended up not happening because of the Haiti earthquake. She understandably decided to stay in Washington and deal with that. So she didn't come. One of the things that she was going to be doing was doing a virtual, I suppose, ribbon cutting, you'd call it, for the new wind power stations at the New Zealand Antarctic base. And I mean, that was a big deal for New Zealand. I think they've got 3 wind turbines now, which supplies a good chunk of their power. Most of the stations in Antarctica were powered by diesel, which is a major issue in an ecologically sensitive area like Antarctica. And so this was one of the moves, one of the things they wanted to do to try to make it a bit more self-sufficient. Now, as it happens, New Zealand is lagging behind other countries that have already moved in this direction. Belgium is, as I understand it, the most advanced and is basically self-sufficient with a combination of both solar and wind power, providing their energy needs. Now, New Zealand, I think they said needed, ideally would need two more turbines in order to be energy self-sufficient, but there's the cost factor. And so unless somebody comes up with the money for them, it's not going to happen. But at any rate, it's a step in the right direction. But that's one of the things that Hillary was going to do when she was here. This past week, the second in line to the British throne, or the New Zealand throne for that matter, Prince William, was in New Zealand to open the Supreme Court. Now, I have mentioned the Supreme Court in the past. The highest court for New Zealand used to be the Privy Council in London, sometimes called the Law Lords. And the previous Labour-led government abolished the right of appeal to the Privy Council and instead established a New Zealand Supreme Court, which I highly applaud because our highest court should be here in New Zealand and not in some other country. And so through a convoluted series of steps, they eventually built this building or refurbished it or some such thing. And so he was here for the opening. It was his first time making a trip as an official representative of the Queen in the Queen's place, you know, taking on some of the Queen's duties. So that was somewhat interesting, I suppose. When he then went to Australia, and I believe he's leaving there today or tomorrow. At any rate, the Sky News Australia, which I've sometimes referred to as News for Penguins because everything they report has a focus on Australia, they were reporting on his imminent arrival, and they said that they didn't want to have a security breach like happened in New Zealand. I was thinking, what happened? Well, I found out that it was an 18 or 19-year-old guy who was working for a radio station in Wellington, and the Prime Minister was hosting a barbecue for Prince William on the grounds of Premier House, which is the official residence of the Prime Minister, a bit like the White House, only obviously smaller and less of a target. But anyway, and he went to the gate to get in. They wouldn't let him in, understandably. And so he went to the side and scaled the fence and apparently was mingling with guests before the police found him and arrested him and took him out. I took him off the grounds, I should say. Took him out, make it sound like they killed him. And he was on the phone the whole time up until the police came along and reporting back to the radio station. So it was just it was a radio stunt. But it did occur to me that it is a major difference between New Zealand and Australia. In New Zealand, a security breach means some kid with a cell phone. In Australia, it probably would mean somebody with a weapon. But anyway, the kid did say later that he was a bit embarrassed because it made New Zealand look bad, and that was the part he regretted, and justifiably so, I would say. And in more recent news, the New Zealand Herald reported that the Twilight series of books accounted for about 4% of all books sold in New Zealand in 2009. I'm actually somewhat embarrassed about that. I'm not a huge fan. I'm certainly not an enemy or anything, but I'm not exactly a fan. And yes, the other day I was in our Borders in the Auckland city, in the central city, and there were these girls over by the section of Twilight books. Yes, they have a section. And they were saying, oh, they should have used this picture. Oh, no, they should have used this picture. Oh, he looks so much better in this picture. I didn't bother to go see who they were talking about, but I thought, oh, there's the demographic talking. And yeah, so that was, I don't know, I was kind of embarrassed about that. There was also a story that anyone driving in the summertime should be wearing gloves because car window glass, or actually glass, window glass in general, doesn't do a very good job of screening out ultraviolet radiation, which is what leads to skin cancer. Now, I don't actually think that many people are going to take them up on this, but it's certainly a better option than what had previously been suggested, which is that people wear sunscreen when they're driving, some particularly over long distances, which is really what they're talking about. But the glove option may be better because you're not likely to have slippery hands on the wheel. But I just don't think that you're going to see a lot of people wearing gloves to drive in the summertime, even on long trips. But hey, I could be wrong. And if so, I'll let you know. Now, I do also have have some more personal updates. Last time, I forgot to mention the last of the holiday cards I'd received this year. And I received one from Nancy in Japan. Thank you very much, Nancy. From David, that blue jeans guy, and his partner. Thank you very much. And also from Holly, Fairy Princess Holly, and her feathered, skinned, and furred family. Thank you very much, everyone. And I do apologize for not mentioning it last time, but I just plumb forgot. Now, Today's topic, as I said, it is a bit more controversial than I've talked about recently. And if you don't agree with me, by all means, feel free to leave a comment, or even if you do agree with me for that matter. It's meant to be a conversation, not a lecture. But I call it cultural relativity. And it goes back to when I was a baby leftist, fresh out of university, and eventually moved to the center, or as the leftists would have it, I moved to the right. But anyway, and we were taught that Western countries, particularly the United States, had no right to judge the culture of third world countries. That just because Westerners think that something is wrong in a third world country doesn't mean they've got a right to say so or do anything about it. And that didn't sit well with me at the time, and it still doesn't. But I've learned recently that those rules don't apply if they're talking about a first world country, a developed country. And this happened specifically in relation to a KFC commercial that was running in Australia. Now, the same thing could have happened here, although we tend to don't run such targeted commercials. But nevertheless, I think it's worth talking about because I think it points out how one always has to take cultural context into account. Because whether something in this case is racist or not depends on the context in which it occurs. It's heavily dependent on the context, as a matter of fact. Now, Scotty Little Aussie Battler posted about this. He wanted to talk about it in his podcast, and he's posted the actual commercial plus a response to it, and I'll put a link to that so you can go see them for yourselves. But essentially what it is that the commercial opens, and you see a bunch of people of African descent jumping around and being noisy and boisterous and so on, and this one white guy who's obviously trying to see past them and is getting a bit frustrated, he pulls out a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. The dark-skinned people all take the fried chicken and settle down, and he says, "Too easy," and then they have their jingle or whatever. Now, when Americans saw this, many of them apparently instantly decided it was racist, and it's not, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, you have to understand the context in which the commercial is set. First of all, KFC is a sponsor of these cricket matches. So they are trying to tie their product in with the game itself. Also, in cricket, it's typical for supporters of one country to sit together, especially out in the open stands. Maybe not so much in the covered stands, but certainly out in the open stands. And it's always been that way. And that's true, at least in Australia and New Zealand, I presume, in other countries as well. So essentially what it is that in the context of the commercial, these fans and supporters of the West Indian team, and the West Indian team, whether it's cricket or netball or what have you, is made up of people from the various Caribbean nations. It's not just one. And anyway, and they tend to be of African descent, by and large, although not necessarily exclusively, but by and large. So that's who these dark-skinned people were. They were fans of the West Indies team, and they were trying to cheer their team on to victory. The Australian fan found himself in their section and was not enjoying the game very much because he couldn't see past them. He gets the sponsor's product, Kentucky Fried Chicken, shares it with them, and then they calm down. Too easy is just a remark. It doesn't mean what apparently a lot of Americans thought it meant, that you just pull out chicken and black folks will settle down, which is how they read it. It doesn't mean that at all. Too easy is kind of an offhand expression when you get your way. And in some ways it's almost, and it's not exactly a mark of arrogance, but of over self-assurance that you get your way and it's just too easy. And it doesn't mean what it was taken to mean in the U.S. Now, I'm trying to be careful about how I phrase this all, because I don't want to be unclear for one thing, but I also don't want to unnecessarily cause offense. In the response video from these people who call themselves Young Turks or something like that, they talked about it. They decided instantly that it was racist. And by the end of the video, they were referring to the West Indian supporters as African Americans. They absolutely are not African Americans. They were probably people of West Indian descent who either live in Australia or were tourists or what have you, but they're definitely not American. They might be from Bermuda, they might be from Guyana, they might be from Belize, they might be, you know, it could be anywhere in the greater Caribbean region, and Jamaica, any of those places. And So they were not African American. They assume that because of America's historic baggage, that the white guy is offering KFC to these people because a white person assumes that all black people eat fried chicken. And that's not what's going on there. What's going on there is that the Australian is offering the sponsor's product to the opposing team. Now, as Scotty has pointed out, they similar commercials have run against New Zealanders, against people from Britain, you know, when the English side is visiting, against you name it, any other, South Africa, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, doesn't matter. South Africa, I suppose, you know, any of the cricket playing nations have been targeted in similar commercials. And so when you consider the context, first of all, it was a sponsor's product that you have to understand something about the game of cricket in order to understand the visual context, and the fact that this is one of a series of commercials in which the Aussies in the commercial are sticking it to the visiting team, it is clearly not a racist commercial. Now, I can understand why Americans would think it is. And if they had done something like that, say, at portraying a Boston Red Sox game, then it probably would have been racist. But that's not what was going on here. And I see this kind of thing happening all the time, where Americans in particular, well, it's almost always Americans, will see something happening in Australia or New Zealand or Britain or even Canada and look at it only through American eyes and assume that these other places are wrong. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about. It could be something in pop culture or what have you, like the Australian KFC commercial. It could be a law in Britain or New Zealand or wherever, or it could be something entirely different. They look at these things through American eyes and they assume that it is wrong, it is evil, it is demented, whatever. And my argument is that Americans need to take a step back and say, now, hang on a minute, what is really going on here? And not to automatically have a knee-jerk reaction of looking at it through American eyes, because they're not always your best guide. Now, I know what I'm talking about here because it's taken me all these years to start to understand some of these things. When I first came to New Zealand, I would see some people with a rebel flag, you know, the Confederate flag. And to me, that's a racist symbol. And I see that, and I have a almost visceral reaction to it, a strong emotional response. And it turns out that in New Zealand, people think of the Confederate flag as just symbolizing rebellion and being rebels. They don't see the racial context, because in New Zealand, that sort of racial context doesn't exist. There, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, there are racial issues between Māori and Pakeha, you know, people of European descent, and whites and Asians and so on. But it's nothing like the racial history of the U.S. So here in New Zealand, people would see the Confederate flag and they would see rebels, whereas I saw it and I saw racism. And I had to unlearn a whole lifetime's worth of cultural training in order to be able to look at things that would happen that were happening here in New Zealand or in Australia with different eyes and to not automatically react to it as if it was something that was happening in America, because it is different. Now, there are, I would submit, certain things that are unalterably wrong in all cases. Murder, theft, blackmail, sexual assault of any kind, torture, all those sorts of things are universally wrong. And there is no need to make any kind of cultural allowances for things like that. But when you get into the grayer areas of social attitudes, whether it's racism or homophobia or sexism or any of those sorts of things, classism, I suppose, you've got to start looking at the cultural context for it to be able to make sense of it. First of all, to even be able to determine if there's anything negative going on there. Now, I haven't talked about anything this serious in quite a while, and there's been no particular reason for that, but it is something that I want to start doing more of again, because I think it's helpful sometimes to talk about issues and, I don't know, different ways of doing things. And so that's sort of what I want to do more of. And among the things I want to do more of is talk with expats of various kinds, especially LGBT expats of whatever country, as long as I can arrange it over Skype. So if you are or know someone who is an expat or who wants to be an expat, do get in touch with me. You can email me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at ehrmanspodcast.com. And I would very much like to set something up. I want to try to get more stories being told, because if we can start sharing more cultural experiences and help with awareness, maybe understandings like around the KFC commercial won't be so likely in the future. It was a misunderstanding. I don't think there was anything malicious on the part of the Americans who were judging it as racist, and there certainly wasn't anything malicious on the part of KFC in making the ad in the first place. But it is an instance where a little understanding would have gone a long way to preventing any misunderstandings. Little understanding of cultural differences would have helped prevent these cultural misunderstandings. But that's what I have to say about that. You're welcome to disagree with me or agree with me through the comments or on the phone line. And speaking of phone line, I have a message.
Happy birthday to you, Arthur from Amaranth Podcast. Hope you have a great day on Thursday, Arthur, celebrating your birthday, 21 again. I know you'll have a big party. And also, happy anniversary for the weekend. This is Scotty, a little Aussie battler, calling you from just across the river. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Scotty. And thank you for remembering the anniversary as well. Of course, Thursday, the 21st, is my birthday. And this weekend is, in a manner of speaking, Nigel and my's first anniversary, because it'll be the first anniversary of us having our civil union and becoming legally joined under New Zealand law. Of course, we've already been together over 14 years. So we are in the unusual circumstance of observing our first and 15th anniversaries all in the same year. How's that? But thanks again, Scotty. And I also have some written comments today, one of which I forgot last time. And it was on the video that I talked about, actually. And it's from Benk, who said, "This made me so homesick. Thanks, I think." And that's with a short video. So imagine what it would be with a longer one. And the next written comment was on my previous episode, 191, and it was from Apollonius, who said, "Thank you for describing the oppressive heat. It helped me to deal with the oppressive cold of Atlanta to imagine that some place was so hot that people were resorting to swamp coolers and magnetized glazing applique. Hope you're beating the heat in fun ways. Cheers, Peter." And thanks, Peter. And yes, we are managing to beat the heat somewhat. We received the plexiglass sheeting and have most of it installed. Just have, I think it's three more panels to go, and then it's all done. And as a matter of fact, today, the air conditioning people are coming by to check out the system, make sure it's functioning properly. They suspect, we've talked with them on the phone, they suspect that the gas may be low. And according to them, if the gas is even a little bit low, it can dramatically reduce the efficiency of the entire system. So they're going to inspect it and make sure that it is all up to snuff. Because, as an example, one day last week, a few days ago actually, it was about 34 degrees outside, nearly 34 degrees outside, and it was over 27 degrees in the house. And an air-conditioned house should not be 27 degrees. It's just, that's absurd. 27 degrees, let's see, what is that in U.S. temperature? I got to call up the widget first. 27 degrees Celsius is 80.6 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's roughly how warm, say 81 degrees Fahrenheit in the house. I don't know what the actual temperature was that day. Whereas outside, it would have been about 93 Fahrenheit that day. We haven't had quite so many hot days since, but still the temperature does go up quite high, and it really shouldn't. We've never had this problem before. Now, granted, this is an El Nino year where we have unusually high temperatures, but we've had plenty of hot days in previous years, and we've never suffered like we have been this year. So hopefully the air-conditioned people can sort out whatever it is wrong with this, and we'll be done with it. Now, of course, tomorrow is my birthday, but we will be looking after our young nieces from about mid-morning tomorrow through to Saturday. And originally I thought I was going to be looking after them by myself, and which I was a bit concerned about, to be honest, with this gout thing going on. And so I asked Nigel today, I rang him at work and said, when are you going to be finishing up tomorrow? Because it's still summer, people are still in holiday mode, and so he's been able to finish up a bit earlier, take time off or what have you. So what do you mean? So, well, what time are you going to be coming home tomorrow? Why? Well, because, you know, I was thinking that the girls are going to be here and I might like some help looking after them with my knee and all. So then he finally admitted that he was taking the day off tomorrow, his annual leave, and he was doing it as a surprise for my birthday. But he wasn't going to tell me until, I guess, tomorrow probably. So I thought that was the sweetest thing. So I will have help looking after the girls tomorrow. But that's it for today. I don't know that I'm going to be recording any more Amarin's podcasts this week. Jason and I are tentatively scheduled to record either tomorrow or the next day for the next two political episodes. But apart from that, if I don't speak to you beforehand, have a great rest of the week and weekend, and I will be talking with you soon. Bye, everybody. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarin's Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.